And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And this show, as always, is about food relationships, stories from the land, ecology, and life itself. Mark, we spent the last couple of days at the Sustainable Food Summit in San Francisco.
Yeah, we were at the Ritz-Carlton.
That's right. How was that for you?
It was great. We've both been in this industry for a while. It's always nice to see old colleagues and people and see where they've ended up. A friend of ours is now managing a 450-person CSA for a group of farmers up in the Cape Valley. We got to see Thomas yesterday. Teresa, who is the marketing person for Organic Valley, was so great to run into her.
So, and 450 people, CSA means Community Supported Agriculture, the box program. That means 450 plus people are receiving a produce box every week.
And their
that's
program,
quite, yeah. quite a deal to put that together, to distribute that, to have that be picked up. That's 450 shares of 450 people every week that are awaiting their box of produce.
And not just from one farm, but they're coordinating all those farms up in the Cape Valley, which is just east of Sacramento. And so that's the tremendous thing, is they've actually coordinated several farms and brought all their, so one farm's growing satsumas, another farm's growing lettuce, another farm's doing this, which actually, you know, creates more of a complete box for the customer. It's very nice.
Yeah, it's a logistical masterpiece, mm-hmm. really, what they've put together. Mm-hmm. And we were interviewing industry leaders, asking them, you know, where is this movement and where's the industry heading, and what are the greatest perceived challenges, and what's needed the most? That was really interesting, because without seeing each other, they, you know, most of them answered kind of in the same context of education and labeling, and really pointing to a full life cycle analysis, the real cost of production that organic, this movement, the local food movement, needs to do a better job, and the consumer demands a better job of showing how much it took to grow it, how much it took to package it, how much it took to ship it, and what do we do with all the packaging and everything that comes with it, mostly in the non-organic world, but even beyond the food world, what do we do with that when it's done, right?
I thought it was really interesting, and what you're bringing up is that Thomas Wright, when we were interviewing him, you and he got into a conversation about...
That's right.
I mean, I thought this was a novel idea that a company would have to be responsible for a product from the time it started till the time it ended, which including either composting or recycling, anything that was involved in that product.
Both the product and the packaging.
The product, right? And the packaging. And I thought, gosh, what a great idea. And then you both got into a conversation about a program that is just the normal way of doing business in Germany.
I did not know that, honestly, when I first came over. It's called Der Grüne Punkt, the green dot. And it's law. Every company has to ensure a complete life cycle responsibility, meaning you as a consumer, you can buy the product and literally open up the entire packaging, take the product with you at home, and leave the entire packaging in the store. The store will know what to do with it, because the company paid for it. The company paid for making sure that the store owner knows where to ship it, or how to compost it, or what to do with the packaging.
And it's included in the price.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's so second nature, it's so established, it's not even that you can't opt out. It is the way it is, right? And that means full company responsibility. So they do pay much more attention to what is the smartest design of product, what's the least amount of trash, how can the recycled paper content be the highest, and what do we do with it afterwards? That's why even cars, right? Most parts in a Mercedes are recyclable and
wow.
marked and labeled for that. So they know exactly that out of the seat, once it's melted, they make, you know, whatever, the dashboard. And this is just an example.
Yeah,
I don't even know it's true. But
yeah.
I'm saying, like, every piece has life after its life in a
that,
way.
That's, you know, that to well, me just seems completely logical on a way to do business. I mean, can you imagine we would have a completely different economy?
It's so true.
If everybody knew that this was taken care of.
And it's so simple, of course, right? I mean, it's like as if your consequences, as if your actions don't have any consequences, not even a little. Mm-hmm. We all know they do. So yes, if food in this case was labeled accordingly, was showing that where this packaging is going would give you the full life cycle picture, our decisions would be different, and it would show a completely different cost point, mm-hmm. you know, price point.
Mm-hmm. You know, another,
we're paying, the truth is really we're paying for it anyway, right?
Oh,
we're paying for the consequences of landfills, and as we know, landfills, the methane created in landfills is much, much more potent or a much greater contributor for global warming than CO2. It's 22 to 24 times stronger than CO2. So it's an issue. Methane out of landfills is an issue. All the organic matter, the paper, all the things we just, you know, toss and don't compost. Mm-hmm. It's a lost opportunity, actually. And more than that, as our actions have consequences, it contributes to global warming. So yes, it kind of makes perfect common sense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it seems like that should be just a normal thing that we'd be doing here in this country.
Yes. And the one who pays the least attention in Germany pays the most because we know.
So if you have a lot of packaging, if you have a lot of...
then your product will get taxed for that and you will need to deal with it. There's an economic incentive of doing it right.
So instead of going to the store and looking for that biggest box you can find of cornflakes or something, you'd actually be looking for a box that was actually really more to the size of whatever the packaging that fit into that box.
Or you know that really overpackaged product, you will pay for it, right? Because the company will put the cost for them that they had to pay back into the product. So it's either less quality product. Because most of the money went into the packaging, or it's an irresponsible company. Either way, you know, if you look at packaging in Germany, it's pretty darn on the green dot. Mm-hmm. Anyway, more on that and the Organic Summit and the interviews that we took, we'll have in upcoming shows. Thanks for listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back talking about what's in season and produce with our produce wizard, Earl Herrick, our guest today. Stay tuned right when we come back.
Your name on it, above the clouds in the atmosphere, just say the words and we out of here, hold my hand if you're feeling scared, we're flying up, up, out of here.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation, a show about relationships, food, stories from the land, ecology, and life itself. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio, Earl Herrick.
Yay!
The owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce, a distribution business completely dedicated to organic agriculture and to organic fruits and vegetables since 1988. You've never done anything other than organic, Earl. Isn't that right?
You know, years ago when we first started, the Southern Hemisphere apple program hadn't gone organic yet. And there was a huge demand to have that apple in the off season, which is March through July. So for, I think, a year, we brought some of those apples in. And then
were they IPM?
I don't, if they were, they weren't designated.
Okay.
I think
okay.
back, that was, we're talking 20 years ago.
IPM, can you integrated pest management?
Integrated pest management.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's sort of a step before organic or a step beyond conventional. It's usually where growers are trying to regulate the amount of pesticides or use less pesticides and incorporate more beneficial insects and good soil fertility and management practices around their farms, right. Not necessarily organic, but right. Moving in that direction.
Like flower borders to attract good bugs that then eat the bad bugs.
Yeah, and in some cases, some farms, orchards are in such a way that that's all they can do right now.
Right.
They can make that step, and it's a great step to make.
In the East Coast, as a matter of fact, they have a coddling moth problem with apples specifically. There are not a lot of organic local apples on the East Coast because of the pest problems they have. They have to use certain things. Now they have low spray programs and they try to use the most benign substances they can, but they just can't get to an organic place with a lot of that apple production there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, any step is a good step in the right direction. Earl, welcome to the show.
Yes. Is it too late to say Happy New Year?
No, never. No, we do that here until June, May, June-ish.
Then it shifts over. And
yeah, into like what is left. No, we're pretty flexible at this show, actually.
Baseball season. Happy New Year. We do it up till baseball season because that's when the year really
there you
starts.
Go. There you go.
Okay, boys, let's not get into baseball because that show would be over. But let's talk about what happened after the Giants won the Super Bowl produce-wise. So we are now, that was what, November?
November 1, that last game.
Oh,
that,
the Super Bowl, no, of course, the World Series. But it felt like the Super Bowl.
Well,
boy,
yeah,
that was phenomenal, right?
Well, it lives on here. I mean, we don't want to give it up here in San Francisco.
I know.
Yeah, it's pretty wonderful.
Yes, yeah. Gorgeous.
Defending champions, that's right.
That's right.
So now if we could actually get to produce, what we planned on talking
well,
about.
Well, that was November. So the question, what has happened over the last 2 months? You're really the produce wizard. You've dealt with this since 1988. You know the growers you're working with. You know the farms. You've seen many, if not most of them. Personally, you are following the weather literally day by day because soil is one thing, weather is the other, both combined make the quality of the product. And then, of course, there's the handling and the shipping, depending on where it's coming from and where it's going. But where are we right now? What's up with produce?
Well, since November, that kind of is the time frame as November comes in and the weather changes here. It knocks out the local produce program. So everything shifts and gets planned and is planned to shift down south. We're talking about Southern California would be Imperial and Coachella Valleys in production in Yuma, Arizona, and then the northern states of Mexico. Their production comes in, and that's where we've been and where we are right now. Now, that being said, there is some local production, but with the weather as cold and as wet as it is, very little production. You may see that at a farmer's market, maybe at a going direct to certain little stores locally. So we're in the winter development, so most everything is coming from those southern areas, and there's some great product coming out of that area.
What about, since this is a national show, what's happening in the other parts of country, like Florida?
Thank you. Florida and parts of Texas and the Gulf area, that has production for the East Coast. There, as we are over here, we're susceptible to that cold weather. Mm. Texas especially will get major storms, cold weather, Arctic weather coming out of Canada right down the Great Plains. This year they knocked out the grapefruit season for a period of time. Florida also gets their, I don't know the exact geography of where it comes, but Northern Florida gets freeze all the time too.
And that's becoming more and more of a common, like the last 5 years there's been a freeze in Florida. Mm-hmm. And this is where people go to for the winter time. But you know, I want to go back to, so for, you know, there's a lot of people who wait for a Texas grapefruit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like California grapefruits and I've had Florida grapefruits. But there is a Texas grapefruit that comes about this time of year, right?
Yep.
And they're not going to be here this year. So no matter where you live in the country, if you're waiting for those, don't wait.
If you live in Texas, you can get them. But yeah, they're not shipping them.
Not enough quantity.
Well, they have a pest problem, and they don't want, and especially California, we're not bringing that product. So there's no shipment into California of Texas grapefruit at all, which is a shame. I agree with you, Mark. It's wonderful product. So right now we're in the beginning of the California grapefruit, and it's, we have the white and the pink and the red, and the quality is quite good.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And our guest today, Earl Herrick, the founder and owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a distribution business entirely dedicated to organic agriculture and organic fruits and vegetables all the way since 1988. For more information, you can go to earlsorganic.com. Mark, you had a...
Before we get too much into citrus, though, and so we all know we had that really rainy spell in December, and we've had some pretty good cold snaps up here in Northern California and in Southern California, and rain, and that's got to have affected the prices and the quality of the product that has been in the stores over the last month. Yes, anywhere you are.
Well, yeah, no doubt about it. The let's talk about veg. That cold snap went all the way into northern Mexico. It affected all the growing areas. It also hit the East Coast and Florida and Texas, affecting all the winter production all over the country. Mm-hmm. Most of the production does come from Mexico and Southern California. So what we've seen with the rain, especially what it does, it inhibits, you can't go out and pick in the rain. And then depending on how long the rain lasts and how heavy it is, it will be that long before you get out there. And not only that, in picking, you're also interrupting the planting schedule. So what gets created then is this gap where you're going to have production of something in 45 to 60 days, but it's interrupted for a week with wet weather. So that pushes that. So in 2 months, there all of a sudden there's going to be a high price in broccoli, let's say, because it wasn't planted. So supply is down. Prices are going to go up.
Even though it's 70 degrees outside, you're walking into your store. It's been like that for 2 weeks. You're going, hey, what's going on here?
Broccoli is
$3.99. Well, actually, broccoli has been $3.99 in most of the places where I've been traveling around the country because of the cold snap we had, because of the wet weather we had in Southern California 2 or 3 weeks ago.
But isn't it true that rain, I understand, but cold maybe inhibits the growth, but it also ups the sugar, right?
Precisely. For example, right now, there is still product coming out of the Watsonville-Oxnard area where it's been quite cold and real rainy.
Here in California.
Thank you. And so the cold weather will just slow that growing process down.
But it's,
so
they won't it's have, delicious.
Oh, yeah, incredibly sweet. So when it gets cold, it sets the sugar. So carrots right now, you want to be eating carrots.
Parsnips, too.
Any root product right now.
Yeah.
The chards, all the greens. So the northern frost-kissed, if you will, product is incredibly sweet. You get a different experience of it this time of year. Mm-hmm. So that's also going to be true with product grown in areas that have been had the cold effect, whether it's on the East Coast, in the middle of the country, or over here.
Well, so if a listener in New York, right, mm-hmm. New York City, New York State, right now in January, what can they find in the store? Is that mostly Arizona and California grown vegetables?
Yes, yeah, no doubt. They will have a predominance of Florida tomatoes.
Maybe Mexico.
And definitely, and then Mexico. And right now, there's the best value out there right now is tomatoes. There's a good supply. So East Coast is going to get the product grown on the West Coast and in Mexico. It's just that is the breadbasket in the winter time.
And you just mentioned tomatoes. You know, normally that's not a topic that we talk about in January in California or pretty much anywhere in the country. But the fact is that there are tomatoes in the stores right now. And they're there, and people are buying them.
Yeah. You know, it's a different thing than what you're going to get in June, July, September, October. If you want a tomato, they're there, great value, and I recommend Roma.
And we're talking about organic tomatoes now.
Yeah. This is our conversation.
Roma looked like a little egg-shaped.
Like a plum, like a large plum, and you want to cut a cross-section so it's nice and round and lay that out on a BLT. That'll work.
Well, and so where you're going here is most people say, well, I never buy tomatoes in the winter, and good for you if you don't. But if you do want one, what Earl and I are recommending is that Roma is going to give you that more of that texture you're probably looking for, because it's a little bit of a firmer tomato. And it generally gets a little redder this time of year than like a slicing tomato. An heirloom tomato, you're going to see them in stores. This is only my personal opinion. But I don't think that I would ever spend $3.99, $4.99, $5.99, $6.99 like an heirloom bush for an heirloom bush tomato ripens, right now, yeah. Because I just don't think you're going to get a color, but you're not going to get that flavor that you would get from it being locally grown no matter where you live in July or August.
And how to pick that perfect tomato or any other produce for that matter. Right here when we come back after the break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are here with Earl Herrick, produce wizard extraordinaire. We'll be right back.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frey Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frey never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frey organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frey Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly-certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we are talking produce. What's in season, how to pick the perfect produce, what to do at a grocery store, produce department, and what not. Our guest today, Earl Herrick, the owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce.
So, Earl, we were talking about veg. We got kind of sidetracked on tomatoes, which isn't a real big story right now. But we had mentioned that Romas were the one to buy. You started talking about greens and a little bit about broccoli. So if people are going in and they're looking for greens right now, I mean, what do they look for? What's a couple of good points, tips they can take home?
Perky, yeah. Right? I always go like, oh, perky.
Perky, absolutely.
I'm there.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking about greens.
Perky, greens.
You know, there's a difference this time of year than in the summer, because you're going to get product coming out of colder weather, and it's going to be in the ground a little longer. It's going to have that kiss of cold, which is going to develop incredible sweetness.
And makes it maybe shorter.
It's going to be shorter. It's taken longer to grow.
Like, you brought some chard, and I know, yeah, in summer chard or in fall chard can be, you know, 2 feet.
Yeah,
and it can also store gigantic.
Yeah, mm-hmm, and also the leaf composition can be like lettuce. Can be very tender.
Yes,
where
soft.
This time of year, you're going to get that hearty green. You're going to get that comfort food.
Yeah, it's almost like shrubbery. I mean, yeah, this is like
shrubbery.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
What's wrong with that word shrubbery?
I want the shrubbery. So you're also going to find highest color. You're going to find the highest color this time of year too. Again, the cold is going to bring out the color. So what I have here is some rainbow chard and some lacinato, also known as dinosaur kale. Both
real thick leaves. I
mean, you can stand that up, up this, right this on the wall, right? It's like super firm.
Yeah, this is great stuff. Great vitamin A and calcium nutrients in there. This
so
is
you go by look, by perkiness, by color.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, if you're in the department, feel free to take a little bite off of it, snap a little off, and give it a taste.
Okay, so we talked about that during the break, and that might get you in trouble, but it is, Mark, for you who has been in produce for 30 plus years, it is really the thing to do, right? If you spend $10 on produce, you might as well, just like with cheese or something else where you would ask for a sample, it's not just normal, it's really what you need to do. Otherwise, you might end up with something that looks good, but that it's flavorless.
Well, yesterday we were in the store together, and I grabbed chard, and I just said, here, try this. And we were teaching the produce guy about the greens and stuff. And it was a little bit firmer texture, like Earl was talking about.
Yeah, a little bitter, but yummy, like good bitter, like, you know, complex and rich.
And I actually got more of a sweetness out of the leaf myself. There was a little bit of bitterness in that arugula. But the chard was actually very nice
very
and sweet.
Very peppery arugula, very sweet, firm, like almost, you know, crunchy, hard. Mm-hmm. But and you can massage that, right? We can get to that in a second, what you do with really firm leafy green vegetables. But is that what you do, Earl? You like break a piece and try it?
I will do that, and I look for a general vibrant disposition, if you will. I mean, you pick it up, does it wilt? If it wilts when you pick it up, it's not fresh. It's not what you want. You want something that's got that life force still in it. And if you go in the shop often enough, you're going to get that relationship. Sure. You're going to understand.
Cool. And so if in doubt, ask the produce guy to please, can I try this? And in most cases, they will say yes. Well, and they should let you.
I want to stress that. Definitely, as shoppers, develop a relationship with your produce people. Let them allow them to sample, you know, ask those questions. You'll be doing yourself and them a favor.
And it's your pocket, right? I mean, your money out of the pocket. How often have we bought something that we didn't really enjoy? And if we don't enjoy it, most likely 3 days later, it's still there in the fridge, kind of rotting. And I'm so sensitive to that. And I really pay attention to eating it anyway. And I just threw $7 worth of feta away because I didn't see it behind the milk or something. Mm-hmm. And that hurts. That's $7. That's, you know, that's a lot of money for me. And it's certainly if you just lose it.
Timber would have wanted to eat that.
That's right. So, that's not besides throwing away food, but that's really, if you do that throughout the year, we're talking, 20% of what you buy, as we know, statistically gets thrown away. The carrots in your crisper, the milk that spoils, that's a lot of budget.
So the best way to store chard, there's a couple different ways that you can do this. You can just keep it in a plastic bag in your crisper drawer, in your refrigerator, which is a great way to do it if you just don't even want to do anything with it. Some people do things like chard and lettuce leaves where they'll actually wash them and then cover them with like a paper towel or a damp towel and stick them in the refrigerator and can get a week, maybe a week and a half worth of shelf life out of there.
You got that from your
mom,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you wash the whole bunch of chard and one layer of leaf, one layer of paper, one layer of leaf, one layer of paper, wet as they are, and then it becomes this stack
the towel becomes
paper.
Damp.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, you know, they're not sopping wet. You're going to actually shake them off a little bit, but they have been damp.
Sure.
Now, so there's two
That's
things.
That's incredible. I'm doing this now, and it really adds three days to storage.
The other thing you can do, if you don't want to get quite that elaborate, is get wet towel and wrap it around just the
outside,
the bottom of the roots right there, and that will keep it all pretty vibrant too.
How about keeping them in a jar of glass?
Absolutely,
is that good? Don't rot.
No. I mean, you know, if you keep it for a long enough time, it will. But no, it won't rot. And again, if you're buying greens, you want to get to them within a couple days. You know, that's when they still have their highest nutritional value. And, you know, I always recommend shop as often as you can.
What you're saying is even when they're cut and shipped, when you buy them, they're still alive. It's still an alive product. Well, and so they will take up water. They will take up.
Well, that's how we hydrate things in retail stores. Actually, in most retail stores, if you're in Urbana, if you're in New York, if you're in North Carolina or someplace, and you got green shipped from Earl's across country, well, that green could have been picked 7 days ago, 10 days ago. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times in produce departments, they'll take them, cut the stem off, put them in a little bit of warm water, tepid, right? A little bit of warm water to help open the pores so they draw more water in.
You want to use warm water.
Yeah, and then what that does, then when you put them in your fridge, that seals the moisture back in the plant, and then you'll get a little bit longer life out of there.
Should a listener do that too?
When you get it,
cut the bottom just like a rose, put in warm water for what, 15 minutes?
I don't know that it's necessary. I mean, here's the thing. Here's why I'm just trying not to go too far here. It's because I know that many people, when it comes to fruits and vegetables, want to do the least amount that they have with it. And so I'm trying to give them, these are all things they can do. But if you just took those greens home, put it in a plastic bag and stuck them in your crisper and ate them within a couple of days, you'd be fine.
Sure.
If it started feeling a little limp or a little wambly, then you could cut that in and put it in a little bit of warm water and let it soak up some moisture, mm-hmm. and then it would come back and be nice and crisp again.
What's the golden rule for carrots? Because I love carrots and I always have some, but after 4 days, they do become kind of limp.
The way I deal with carrots is I like to buy them with greens. If you buy them with greens, chop most of the greens off, still leave the green attached to the top of the carrot.
Or carrot tops.
Yeah, right? And I'll soak them in warm water for a little bit, and then I put them in a Tupperware type of thing, and they will keep for ever in that way.
Well, they're a storage root.
You put them in a tupper without water.
Yeah, without water. But I've soaked them, so they've drawn in some water. And exactly.
For how long? 15, 20 minutes, hour?
Oh, yeah, 10, 15 minutes is fine.
Really?
Oh. And they are a root. They're a root. I mean, it comes from the historic root cellar. That's where they're used to that, dark and cool. You could probably even put them on your back porch if it was 35 degrees and be fine.
This is Earl Herrick speaking, the founder and owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a distribution business entirely dedicated to organic fruits and vegetables and organic agriculture since 1988. Our guest today talking about what's in season. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And Earl, you brought some chard there with you. And what's the other? Kale?
Kale.
Should we try that?
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
And Lacinato kale that he brought 20 years ago, you were just starting to see it in produce departments, and now it is the number one selling kale in any produce department.
This specific variety.
Yeah, it's a long, tall leaf. It's actually
narrow.
It can be narrow. It can be wide. The texture, though, almost looks like the back of a dinosaur or a lizard, that kind of pebbly skin.
Or yours.
Texture. Or mine, yeah.
No.
Or a big, long tongue. But
very dark.
It's got
green.
Kind of a prehistoric look to it.
Yeah. It's petrified, almost. It looks like, yeah.
So my taste, it gave me a great little sugar thing for a moment, and then you get a deep, flavored greens. That's how I can explain this.
It's a nice, robust flavor without being overbearing.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be great.
And you know what? Yeah, go on.
No, this would be great if you chopped it up very finely. You could use it in salad, but it would be great braised or sautéed or just even slightly steamed.
You know, put it in soups is fantastic. And I'll tell you, I like to put vegetables in mashed potatoes. And this would work
fine.
It's
a great way to get it to eat them. Yeah,
you just chop them up and they steam down to nothing. And you're eating something that, if you're not a greens person, that's one way to get them into your diet.
Also, if you like potato chips, really fun to just put them in the oven at like 380 degrees for 6, 7, 8 minutes. You can tap them and they become really crispy, you know, when they're done. With just a tad of olive oil and maybe a little bit of salt, they'll literally become kale chips. Delicious. What I find interesting eating these raw, though, is that they're delicious raw. It's a vegetable that when I see it in the grocery aisle, I would not think I could just buy this for lunch and eat it, you know, just like a carrot or an apple. Mm-hmm. But actually, you can. This is a really yummy snack, I find now. And I'm not the dark leafy green vegetable, you know.
Well, the other thing, too, is if the stem...
This is yummy.
Yeah, if the stem is a little too much for you, just de-stem it. Just take it off the stem.
Trim the leaves on either side.
Exactly.
And you know how I started getting more greens in my diet is just simple things like burritos. I'd make myself a burrito, little beans and all the things I'd like to put in there, and I would just take a little bit of kale and mm-hmm. chop it up in there.
Yep.
And it's kind of like the potato thing where you're starting mm-hmm. to put it with something that you like, and the yep. flavor's not going to be overbearing, but you're still going to get those benefits of that type of the antioxidants and all the value.
Yeah, and I finished last year before I went to Germany with a 1 week cleanse. Do you remember?
Right, yeah.
And you kind of start introducing, of course, the healthiest foods after 6-7 days of more or less fasting or juice fasting in this case. And all I ate was like a gigantic plate of green vegetables. And boy, that there's a flavor world that we are not used to. And you know, I understand at one point you crave protein and at one point you crave chocolate and sugar again and all that. That's all good. But wow, the happiness and flavor profile of an entire pile of vegetables, different kinds, avocado, you know, tomatoes, whatever I ate. Amazing. It's a really a world that I'm not intentionally expose myself to on a regular basis, and very rewarding, amazing.
So you're talking about coming off of a fast then?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my experience
Boy.
Too. When you eliminate all those things
caffeine,
going on,
sugar.
And then as you reintroduce them, you get to see them in a more pristine environment.
Yeah.
I mean, just brand new again.
That's right. What is this here, Earl?
Now, that's a green chard, and it's part of a bunch of rainbow chard, which is a gold, green, and red chard in one bunch. But it's become pretty popular in the last 5 years.
Same thing. You look at vibrance.
Yep.
That's actually a great word if you look at anything,
mm-hmm.
for that matter, but especially produce, and especially green leafy produce, if it's green, vibrant, and just has the life force in it.
Yeah,
of course, that's the way.
It's shiny.
Absolutely,
you know,
you can tell.
Yeah, you can just tell it's alive.
No dark spots, no wiltiness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That lacks perforation. Sometimes bugs will go in and eat, you know, create little holes. That's not really a terrible thing if there aren't too many.
Mark, what's the flavor for you here? What is this?
This is where I
get... At its height?
I actually get... a little teeny bit of sweetness, but I actually get more of a...
like nutty.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very, very nice flavor. It's actually a flavor that is a little bit different than the when I normally eat chard. Very fresh, very, very nutty flavor, but mildly nutty.
So this is coming from Oxnard, which is in between Santa Barbara and L.A. Historically, it's a big off-season growing area for produce in California. That used to be the winter place to grow. And then in the last 20, 30 years or so, they opened up, more growers got down into Coachella and Imperial Valleys of California.
Mm-hmm. And all this is organic, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And really the number one rule, because what we taste doesn't really matter. It's important what the listener will taste. So when you go to the produce aisle, again, ask the produce guy or gal to give you a sample, to break a piece off and try it right there in the store. And if you like it, great. If you don't buy it. That's really the most golden rule of all rules. You're listening to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
The golden rule of all rules. Wow. And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Anyway, today we're talking produce. What's in season, how to pick it, how to store it, how to prepare it, what to do with it. We just did vegetables. We will do citrus and lots of other stuff when we come back right after this break.
Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Golden Rule Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today is Earl Herrick, the owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce. And we are talking about produce, fruits and vegetables, organic throughout the nation right now in January. What's in season? We talked about kale and chard. And during the break, Mark, before you said, you know, you incorporate more leafy greens now into your diet by just adding a little bit here and there into your burrito, for example. I'm finding now that I even like to munch on one leaf watching TV. It's really, you know, it's like, it's yummy raw for me. I'm very Paleolithic.
Is that Jersey Shore or the Kardashians or what is that?
No, it's a chard.
Oh.
It's chard. And Earl, you were saying during the break, which was really great, actually, it fits into any kind of meal, snack. You were mentioning eggs. What do you...
You know, a lot of times I think we categorize fruits and vegetables, and sometimes with the greens, you think that's got to be a dinner item. Well, one of the ways I started integrating it was scrambled eggs. I just chop it up real fine, throw it in there. It disappears with the scrambled eggs. I like it with brown rice, too. And I'll tell you, chopping it up and getting the stem out of it, the green, even a hearty green like this, really cooks down to really nothing, and it's a great absorbs onions and garlic flavors really well.
And so you add a little bit of health, you add a little bit of flavor that you can't even really detect. It's like just a little nuttier. You're grounding the eggs.
Exactly.
Beautiful thing. And I know we had a show months ago with a nutritionist who was saying that if you put these leaves in warm water for just a minute and then massage them, literally knead them with your hands and a little bit of salt maybe, they become as soft as avocado dip. So, you know, any leafy green, any stemmy kind of rich in fiber green, you can literally give a little massage in the salad bowl and it becomes a super tender vegetable or piece of produce in your mix, and you bring actually even out the sweetness of it.
Well, and if you go to nourishingnutrition.com, Jennifer Brewer was the person that we had on, and
yes,
she describes that whole massaging of the kale.
Massage the kale.
Sounds like an old Celtic tradition or something, like massaging of the kale.
That's right. And she was saying it becomes as soft as kind of, you know, almost avocado dip, which brings us to the next produce. Let's talk about avocado. This is a very unusual year.
It really is. It's maybe one out of 10 or 20. This is the largest California Haas avocado crop in the last 10 to 20 years. What we've enjoyed about that is that they're still in production right now. So in other words, if you go into certain stores, you can find a California late crop, we would call it, because most of the time the crop is done by November, midway through December. So you get an opportunity to taste something that's incredibly rich in oil and nutty flavor. so much so that you want to eat them firm. You don't want to eat them that soft, normal way you may associate with an avocado now. You want to eat them firm, have them be dark, but don't have them be soft because it'll be too ripe. The oil will probably be rancid.
So you're saying the quantity did not affect the quality. It's a really good crop.
Oh, yeah, incredible. Yeah, the quantity didn't affect the quality. Now, what you're going to run into, though, is you also have a Mexican and a Chilean crop simultaneously. So
Right now. They're all here.
And
they're
sometimes they even put them in the same stack, right?
There are some departments where I've seen that, and that's a shame because they're going to ripen differently. They're going to have different flavor profiles, and you could have one go, wow, that's rich and oily. Let me get another one. And if they're not identified correctly in a retail outlet, then you could be picking up. I've seen that. You have a Californian, a Chilean, a Mexican right next to each other, not identified, different flavors. Again, I stress creating that relationship with your produce person so they can let you know what they have.
And so if your store is only carrying Chilean and Mexico avocados, because they're going to tend to be a little bit less expensive, mm-hmm. Then you shouldn't expect that really creamy high oil flavor that you've just had for several months, that you've just had from August until November or December.
Which we all have experienced, right? You go into the store, you find the perfect, you just love it. You take it home, you eat it, and it's like, whoa. You remember, you go back 2 days later, you buy the same item even.
What you think is the same item, yeah.
Or maybe the same item, but it's now 2 days later. Who knows? And it's disappointing. So whatever the reason, how can you prevent that? Because you would never cut open an avocado and eat it and take that one home. What do you do with that?
Well,
I would.
Really?
Well, I want to let Earl speak on this, but I just want to let you know, you said this earlier, Earl and I have mentioned it at many different times when we've had Earl on the show, is if there's a ripe avocado there, and people are listening to us right now going, okay, oh, these Chilean or these Mexican avocados may not be as tasty as they have been. And there's a ripe one in the store. Why wouldn't you ask for a taste of that? So you go home, you're not going to be disappointed. You'll know that it'll be creamy and it'll have avocado flavor, but it just won't be as rich of flavor as you've been getting a few months back. Because not every store in the country is going to be able to have California old crop avocados.
Yeah, not likely. Not this time of year.
And so there's going to be select stores that will have them. So if you're getting these other ones, yes, find a ripe one and say, take it to your produce person and say, will you cut me a slice of this? I want to see how it is, because that'll determine how you use it at your house.
Now to perhaps ensure that happening, tell that attendant, say, you know, I'll buy this. I just want to know what I'm getting here.
Sure.
And I would do that anything.
Can you tell by look if they're not marked right? Describe what this is.
Yeah, a couple ways. A ripe avocado, a mature avocado.
Haas.
Yeah, mature Haas that's in season is going to develop a more round shape. So if it's got a long neck, it's generally not as mature as in season. So in other words, if it's the beginning of a season, most of the avocados are going to be longer neck, extended neck. And as the season goes from January into the summer, they're going to get rounder, more mature. And that is one of the ways. Also, a new crop is going to be shiny. As an avocado ripens, it gets dull in its exterior skin.
Uh-huh.
So a new crop is going to be shinier. It's going to that's the main thing is going to be, and it's going to ripen irregularly. That's one thing that's going to happen on a new crop. It's going to ripen. Some are going to ripen better than others.
So these are?
Right now, that's a Mexican avocado. Mm-hmm. So it's in season for a Mexican one. It's not a bad avocado. We're just lucky out here that there's still a portion of California left winding down.
So could any novice go to a store, try one, and pick based on that look of what was just tried? Are they different enough to say, okay, these half of these are these, and half of the, if they mix the stack together? No.
I doubt it.
It would be difficult. One thing I do want to caution people about is I was just in the store the other day, and I see it every time I go in the store, where people go with their thumb and their index finger, and they go
squeeze it.
They go to the avocados, and they
tried this,
and they squeeze that. They squeeze it as if they're pinching something,
uh-huh.
And it's the worst thing you could possibly do to a stack of avocados. If you want to see if an avocado is ripe, it should have a gentle give. When you put it in the palm of your hand and you gently squeeze it with between your fingers and your palm. And that's how you should pick out an avocado, because sometimes you'll get an avocado that isn't even ripe yet, but yet is soft because people have been pinching that thing all day. Mm-hmm. And then you're not even going to get the avocado that you wanted.
Yeah,
that's true for almost all fruit. Put it in the palm of your hand, feel the weight. Does it feel heavy for its size? And then that can be a little obscure sometimes, but get used to putting things in your hand and feeling it, and after a while you get a sense of ripeness from different things. That's how you want to treat citrus too.
And when you say it has to have a little give, it's not that it's actually giving. It's like you know, the difference between a rock hard avocado
place.
And a good mm-hmm. rock and hard place hard avocado and a ripe avocado is subtle, but you mm-hmm. can totally tell, right?
Yeah. And sometimes there's a learning process. You cut into it, you go, this isn't quite right. So you know, you incorporate that on that next
one. So I'm trying the Haas compared to the Mexican. The Mexican is totally fine on a sandwich, everything.
Now, so they're both Haas. One is Mexican. Now you're trying a California.
Yeah, I just did. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a step up of refinement of flavor. It's just so much more refined, you know, presence avocado. Like, this is what I would expect. Beautiful. This is a little, not mushy in terms of consistency, but mushy in terms of flavor. It's just, mm-hmm. it's there, tastes like an avocado.
It's on its way out.
But it's.
And one of the things about avocados, if you do get them home and they're dark on the outside, once they've started to have a little give, if you need to, if they're starting to get too ripe, you can put them in the fridge then. But otherwise, you probably shouldn't. You should just leave them out on your counter and use them. But if they start getting a little too soft and you needed an extra day, you could probably put them in your fridge for about a day or so.
Great. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are talking produce and what's in season. With us in the studio still is Earl Herrick, produce expert and the owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce, a fruit and vegetable distributor, among other things. I think you have what, berries and mushrooms and all that too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All organic.
Apples to zucchini, right?
Yes, from A to Z, all organic since 1988. Go to earlsorganic.com for more information. We have a few minutes left in this hour to talk about citrus. This is the time of citrus, right? I love satsumas. Some are firm.
Satsuma.
Yeah, satsuma. Some are firm. Some have a lot of air under the skin. You can mm-hmm. tell. How do you pick a good citrus?
It's going to be put in the palm of your hand, and the best one of the best ways is feel the weight. Obviously, a lot of tangerine mandarins are small. You're not going to be able to determine that. You want it to give. If it's rock hard, it's probably not going to have the juice content you want. So you want to have it give a little bit. And then I would ask for a sample.
But juice, and especially with citrus, you had a story about orange juice. Juice mm-hmm. is not equaling flavor, right?
Not at all. So the other weekend, my son and I were taking his vehicle over to get worked on. And it was early in the morning on a Saturday, and we went across the street to a cafe. It was a bustling, active business, and we grabbed a table. And the first thing we asked for was some fresh juice. and they had it, and they said they had two kinds. They had a fresh squeeze and also a Minute Maid frozen. Which one would we want? And I said, well, you know, we'll take the fresh squeeze. Well, she says they're going to be very tart right now, which I thought, from somebody working in a restaurant, that's great information. So we ordered one of each, because my son probably wasn't going to want that real tart orange juice. We get it, and I take one sip, and it was obvious to me that was a new crop out of probably Arizona or the desert of California, or maybe even from Florida. It was very acid, very low sugar, and that's what's around right now. But what's also around is a late crop California, not unlike the avocado, late crop Valencia, which is incredibly high in sugar. And if that restaurant would have known about it, they wouldn't have to have that what would you call it, that caveat. They would have something that everybody would enjoy. So it's out there. You got to ask the questions. I do want to talk a bit about mandarins and tangerines.
Well, darn it, why don't you?
Let's do that.
So, yes, on that note, Mark, I had tried a satsuma, almost like cold, very little sugar, pretty acidic.
It's the end of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're done.
I had amazing satsumas 2 weeks ago, but within 2 weeks, right, things can turn, can change.
Mm-hmm.
Is
Absolutely.
That the same delivery that was made to the store, or is this a new truck that came up? Like when were these satsumas picked that I'm just eating?
Those were picked about a week ago. It's also from a different geographical area. So these are now coming from San Joaquin around Fresno, if you will, in California, and also from down in Santa Barbara. I believe the best growing area for satsumas is up north by Chico and maybe in the Cape Canyon north of Sacramento.
But literally, if you as a consumer go to a store and you pick something and it's yummy and you come back 3 days later, it could look the same.
Mm-hmm.
These were the ones with the leaves attached.
Right.
Really yummy 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
It could be a different growing area, different climate that they had there, obviously. Had been picked a week before or a week later.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a real completely different product.
Well, not only that, it could even be, like as you say, a completely different product. Even in other words, many people will put them together. They'll say it's a tangerine, and they could be putting any number of six different types of citrus in there because they haven't distinguished that it's a Page Mandarin, a Satsuma, a Lee.
And stores don't tell you that in this bin right now we have this farm from this region.
Mm-hmm.
And then a week later, it's a different bin over in this corner of the store, and that's the new. So they, you know, tend to use the same area for people to identify where they got the satsuma 2 weeks ago. It's the same looking product in the same place, saying organic satsumas, and it just doesn't have, or non-organic, whatever people buy. And it just is it has a completely different flavor profile.
Yeah, again, there's more argument there. Continuing about having that relationship with your produce person to
telling you where it's from, right?
How
it's
exactly
where it's from.
And as more people ask, they'll start incorporating that.
Mike, you just gave me something though that was amazingly sweet. What was that?
That was the clementine.
Yeah, that's a clementine with the stem and leaf. So I want to talk very briefly about tangerines, mandarins. My best understanding is everything's a mandarin. Tangerine is a marketing term because mandarins have a history of like 4,000 or 5,000 years. They came from the Orient over Asia, and as they started getting shipped out of northern Africa, out of Tangiers, somebody placed the tangerine name on them. The fact is, tangerine has no botanical meaning at all. So what we're really eating is mandarins.
Oh, so Tangier. From the place of Tangier,
right?
This whole Moroccan Tunisian area has made it to be identified as that, as coming from there.
And many people say a tangerine represents more of the highly colored, deep orange. And I'm sure there's other opinions out there. Would love to hear them.
But we won't hear them today.
More on that and citrus and what's in season again next month, but also on our website, on Facebook, coming up. With the next couple of days, more resources. We're out of time. Again, unfortunately, always with you, Earl.
Mm.
You're such a wealth of beauty and flavor and information. Thank you for that. That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks again to our guest today, produce expert and the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, Earl Herrick. Earlsorganic.org for more information. Great to have you on the show. And are you going back to work, or are you done for the day?
I'm going to go back to work.
A hardworking individual, Earl Herrick. For more information, earlsorganic.com.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Gina Rustani.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com.
You can also follow us on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, and we'd love to hear from you. So please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then, and thanks again for being part of An Organic Conversation.
Bye-bye.
And the birds in the trees. Well, I guess you say, what can make me feel this way? My girl,
my girl,
talking about